CEOs, civic leaders, entertainers, and entrepreneurs. They all have something in common: the drive, vision, and heart to achieve success. Steve Klein is a renowned business consultant, author, and host of Playmakers Talk Show. Each week, he introduces you to fascinating personalities who will inspire, educate, and motivate you to persevere and find your own success. And now, here's Steve Klein.
Douglas MacArthur said, "There is no security on this earth. There's only opportunity." Welcome to Playmakers Talk Show. I'm Steve Klein. In the studio today are two playmakers who have made their own opportunities. Our first Playmakers company has managed over $1.5 billion with more than $500 million of equity invested. While our next Playmakers organization is serving over 850 abused children in about 350 foster homes. With us today is a CEO who believes that hard work creates luck, while our next executive director is dedicated to the belief that traumatized children deserve all that we can give them. These great playmakers are Andy Mitchell. Andy is CEO of Lantern Asset Management, and Ashley Wilkes. Ashley is executive director of A World for Children, and we're going to begin today's show with Ashley. As I mentioned, Ashley Wilkes is executive director of A World for Children, a child placing agency for abused and neglected children that are taken into state custody by Child Protective Services. A World for Children was founded in April of 1997 to make a better world for special children. AWFC has been entrusted with almost 12,000 children and currently are serving over 850 abused children in about 350 foster homes across the state of Texas. Now, Ashley has a law degree and a bachelor's degree in business administration, which led her to begin a legal career in family law. This background gave her a unique perspective on how the business, legal, and social work worlds can intersect to build a place where children can find refuge. She's dedicated to the belief that traumatized children deserve all that we can give them. Well, Ashley, welcome to Playmakers Talk Show.
Thank you.
You have a couple of different degrees. I mentioned law degree. How did your career in family law lead you to A World for Children?
Well, I actually began a career in family law because I wanted to eventually be a judge that worked with CPS cases and decided whether or not rights should be terminated. My parents actually started A World for Children in our home 20 years ago, and I watched what they were doing, and I started to think, you know, maybe that's the route I would really get to know what was happening with the kids from the inside. And so I saw that they could use some legal help. I came on as general counsel, and then they have stepped back into a retirement position, and I moved forward as executive director at the agency. And I've been doing that the past year, and I'm now where we can start growing more.
So how did you meet them? How did you come together?
Just because we started it in the home 20 years ago with mom and dad. And so they approached me and said, as we've gotten bigger, as we've grown across Texas, just the nature of the business is you have more litigation, you have more things come up that require law and legal knowledge. And so they asked me to come aboard, and with the thought that eventually I would step into a position of leadership.
Interesting how all your background has moved into what they were working on.
Right.
It's all
right.
Come together at a head to
right.
Use your legal background, also help these kids.
Exactly.
Well, let's talk about foster children. We were talking before the show started. Most people don't know much about foster kids and how they get into the system. So what are some of the misconceptions that people have about foster care?
Well, first of all, CPS only has a handful of homes that they actually place the kids in. Generally speaking, they contract with private agencies such as ours, and we license and train and recruit our own foster families. Also, I think that people have a very negative or a misconception of foster homes, foster families. There is an idea that foster families do this work for the money. And I only laugh because that couldn't be further from the truth.
Though that is a misconception that's seen on TV.
It is. It is. The media reports terrible things that happen in any business, just in anything in society, terrible things can happen. But that is the exception, not the rule. Like you said, we have almost 350 families with our agency, and the work that they do with these children that come in completely broken is remarkable.
But I would think that one of the priorities for A World for Children is finding these foster families prior to needing a place to put these children.
We are. We are constantly recruiting foster families. Last month alone, statewide, we had to turn away 1,000 placements. There are 16.
Which probably hurts you.
It's terrible. And unfortunately, the children that are coming in, people believe that CPS goes in if, you know, a child is spanked. Well, that's just not the truth. The trauma that these children have been through and continue to face each day makes finding a place for them to live very difficult. Their behaviors are escalated due to the trauma, and to find a family that will open their homes, open their biological children up to these behaviors is a difficult task, but that doesn't mean that these kids don't need somewhere to go. We don't want them in an institution. That's not where they heal. So it's a constant struggle.
Now, as you're looking for foster families, do they get a background in psychology in terms of how to deal with kids that have come from abused families?
They do. We have, before you can be licensed, you go through almost 50 hours of training. And it is an intense training.
Is the entire
process.
Family or just the husband and wife?
The husband and wife. If there are adult children living in the home, then they will do background checks. We'd go through an intense screening process to ensure the homes that we have. We make sure that we screen the homes thoroughly to ensure that their background is such that they can work with the children. And you have to make the balance between people that have made mistakes in their past and have learned from those mistakes, because frankly, that's where some of our kids, those are the types of homes that they come from. So we want homes that have maybe struggled in the past or maybe haven't, but understand and are willing to accept a very diverse group of kiddos. And we have them starting at from the hospital. They're born with drug abuse. All the way up to 18, sometimes 19-year-olds, because they're trying to finish school. Our kids are very behind in school a lot of times due to all the transitions and the truancy and trauma and everything that's happening in their lives. Education has kind of fallen in the background. So that's one of our big focuses.
So in addition to being a foster family and possibly even donating to A World for Children, what can society do to assist in the prevention of abuse?
Well, it's preventing abuse, I really think, begins with dealing with the kids that we have in care, because the bottom line is the cycle is going to continue. A lot of the kids that graduate from emancipate from our program are in jail within the first few months. They are homeless. 60% are homeless in the first 18 months. There is a high level of pregnancy quickly, and so they go back home. That's where they want to go. So reaching out, being a mentor, a lot of our kids have said that are teens that have been successful, if they can always point back to one person, the coach, the neighbor down the street, somebody they made contact with. So when people come across one of these kids, if they can just reach out to them and give them an anchor, that's all they need, is just one person who cares, because their entire life has been basically somebody throwing them away. And so that makes a big difference.
Well, to a large extent, that's even for kids that come into, grow up in normal homes. There's somebody in their life, a coach, a mentor of some kind outside the family that's important to them. And everyone needs that. And these kids have no one. And to have that is great for them.
Oh, absolutely. I mean, you think about kids that grow up in quote-unquote normal backgrounds. If you just told them at 18, okay, well, get out, and that's it. You have nothing, nobody to set up a dorm room, assuming you can get into college, assuming you can go through the programs. People say, well, college is paid for foster kids. Well, but what about the dorm room? What about the bedding that they need, or the microwave,
money in their pocket,
books. I mean, there's a lot of expenses that go along with college that aren't tuition.
Really, what you're doing is providing a safety net to them.
Right.
They don't have to act right away. They can relax. They can do what they need to do to get taken care of. So what are some of the statistics of what will happen if these kids don't receive care or foster care?
Well, a lot of them go home. And home, the reason they were removed is home is where drugs are. Home is where poverty is.
And it's also comfortable. Even though it's bad, it's comfortable for them.
Right. Everybody, I would say 99% of the kids that we have in care, they constantly are focused on, when do I get to go home? Because as bad as they are, that mother or that father or that grandmother, that's who they've known. That's who they're bonded to. And a lot of the kids, once they get into their teen years, their first thing is, well, when can I get out of foster care? Because foster care is hard. Though a lot of people with a lot of good intentions are in it, there are a lot of fingers in the pie that are influencing a kid's life. And it is a struggle for them. It is a struggle for the people that work with them to see people fail. They go home. They think there's going to be love there, that everything's changed. And what they find quickly is it hasn't. So they end up on the streets. Like I said, the statistics is 60% will be homeless in 18 months. And that's just because they don't really have a choice. And the people that they thought cared aren't there. We as an agency do a camp every summer for our teens.
Talk about that camp.
The whole focus, it's called Launch Camp, and the whole focus is to empower them to dream. Nobody's ever told everybody. These kids have lived under the title of foster child, and we work very hard to say, no, you're just a teen, and it's okay. You are just quote-unquote normal teen, and empowering them to see the vision that they can dream, that they can be something more than what their parents were. We do some life skills training at the camp. One of the biggest things that's important to them, we take about 100 kids, is they always say, I didn't know there were this many people in my same position. And something as small as that.
So now it's not just me.
Right.
I have other people I can talk to about that.
Right. And I'm not the only, I don't have to be a victim. I can be something different. We bring in the FBI. They talk about internet safety. We bring in people from colleges and all different industries to come and talk to them about what they can do. Military recruiters, a lot of our kids end up going into the military. And I think that's very successful for them. That gives them...
It's a good place, giving them some structure, if nothing else.
Exactly.
And
exactly.
Pay.
Right. And it gives them some training, and it gets them away from the safe, well, quote-unquote, safety net of home. It removes them from that community, and sometimes that's what they need, is just a fresh start, because that's always a pull. The biological homes.
Well, you're talking about the launch camp. I'm sure in addition to foster families, you also need donations too.
We do. We do. We do launch camp. We also have a Bridging the Gap program. Foster parents get a per diem every day. There's a reimbursement, and that covers food, clothing, and shelter. Well, as we all know as parents, that's a lot more than that. And so we cover, when you go into care, you get $150 just to buy. A lot of the kids come in with nothing. They've got a t-shirt and maybe a pair of pants that probably aren't wearable. So we go that night and get them all the necessities just to go to school the next day. Well, the parents don't actually receive a reimbursement for 2 weeks. So that's called our Jumpstart program. Then at back to school time, we do $100 for school clothing and $50 for supplies, just to give them a start, give them a little confidence for the beginning of the year. They can go in with a Crayola crayons instead of broken ones that somebody. And so we just have a lot of programs. We do Christmas for the kids, and we do a summer recreation program.
So it's a lot available. Donations, also becoming a foster family. Tell everybody how they can find out, if they want to, more about World for Children.
We have a website, awfc.org, as well as they can call any of the offices that are listed on the website. We have 12 across the state, and there's somebody in that office that will be more than happy to give them any information that they could ever need.
Well, Ashley, thank you very much for being a part of Playmakers Talk Show.
Thank you.
You are a playmaker. Ashley Wilkes is the executive director of A World for Children. Don't go away. We have more. We're going to speak with the CEO of Lantern Asset Management. His name is Andy Mitchell. Back with Andy right after this.
Operation Kindness is the original and largest no-kill animal shelter in North Texas, having saved more than 80,000 cats and dogs over almost 40 years. On a day-to-day basis, Operation Kindness cares for approximately 300 cats and dogs, with another 150 in foster homes. In the past 12 months, more than 4,200 homeless cats and dogs have received medical care, clean shelter, nutritious food, and playtime until they were adopted into a new forever home. Go to OperationKindness.org to adopt or foster a dog or cat. Donate or volunteer. That's OperationKindness.org.
Wipe Out Kids Cancer is a Dallas-based nonprofit organization founded in 1980 dedicated to raising awareness and funding for pediatric cancer research on a national basis. Wipe Out Kids Cancer has raised over $4 million in the crusade against pediatric cancer and spent over 30 years developing programs to not only fight childhood cancer, but to also provide hope and support to kids and families battling cancer. Our mission is to work relentlessly for a day when children are living cancer-free. You can help make a difference. Go to WOKC.org to donate or volunteer. That's WOKC.org.
And welcome back to Playmakers Talk Show. This segment, we're going to talk asset management with Andy Mitchell. Andy Mitchell is founder, CEO, and managing partner of Lantern Capital Partners and Lantern Asset Management. Lantern Capital Partners is a middle market private equity firm targeting investments where meaningful value can be created through improved operational and capital support. Lantern Asset Management is a full-service asset management firm building value through origination, underwriting, acquisition, and improving the performance of investments. Andy also has 18 years of investment management, financial advisory, M&A, and restructuring experience with world-class investment and advisory firms. Well, Andy, welcome to Playmakers Talk Show.
Thank you, Steve.
In doing some research on you, I noticed that you had a term that was referred to you. So how and why did you receive the nickname The Wolf?
Everything has its time and place. That one's a little dated, but came out of the movie Pulp Fiction for this in the time of extreme distress. The guy that came up with the suit out of nowhere and very calmly, and I wouldn't say eloquently, but with great certainty, solved a problem quickly. So it came during a point when I'd been called in to a situation that really required very much a level-headed, unemotional response. And one of the guys was like, wow, you know, you really are the wolf. I wouldn't say lack of, but just the distance I was able to put between myself and the problem and really evaluate it was kind of that's not a trait everybody has. It's sometimes hard not to get emotional in times of stress.
As you mentioned that, I found out something else. It said the firm is focused on finding solutions to complex problems by acting as an advocate for change rather than an antagonist for control. And that sounds like it ties in with that too. So is that what you do for a living, solve problems?
That's the core focus of the firm. Is I think there's two types of people. There's problem solvers, and then there's entrepreneurs and creators of new product. We've always kind of found ourselves we like to identify a problem, figure out a solution, and really bring the people and resources, both financial and operational, to change and make something happen.
So with all that, what is Lantern Asset Management and Lantern Capital Partners?
You know, the firm is an evolution of that thinking. It's really a continuation of my time as a consultant and advisor to an investor. We're combining the best of both worlds and really looking, saying, within the middle market in North America, we're primarily focused now on companies that we think are undervalued because they're underperforming, and other external and internal factors that we see that we can identify the problem, we can identify multiple solutions, and then work over time to execute those solutions and drive value, as opposed to more macroeconomic. You know, we're depending on other external factors. We really look at the company and say, this is a company or team that should be winning with the right coach and the right capital structure. So we put those pieces together to create value.
But you're not just a firm coming in from the outside, coming in to fix things. You also co-invest with all those deals. Talk about why you do that and how that's making you better because you do that.
Again, that's something that evolved over. I enjoyed my time as an advisor and investment banker, but I think eventually you start looking at situations and decide that you're ready to invest your own capital and participate, as opposed to just giving advice and watching other people capitalize on it. So the combination of an advisory and really trying to understand the problem and realize the upside at the same time, be quite simply put your money where your mouth is and really say, I believe in this advice so much that I'm willing to implement it with my own capital along with our investors and then see the fruits of our labor directly.
We talked about that before the show started. Obviously, that shows you're willing to do what it takes. But from a personal point of view, attitude-wise, knowing you are a part of it, so you live and die by what you do, does that make you better at your job because you have a piece of that company?
I think as we discussed earlier, I think alignment of interest is a critical component in business, is that you really, your interests are aligned with your customers, with your employees, with your suppliers, with your investors. And when you can bring all that together and have a direct personal attachment, people tend to want to follow you. This is not a part-time job. I'm not doing this just for the salary. I'm really investing my time and energy. And it's an exciting process. And it's something that I think people seek heavily in this world is that, you know, you're really putting your money where your mouth is. You're investing your time, your talents, your resources, and that they realize that you're not going to be successful if they're not successful.
You're investing, as you said, in the middle market. But are there specific investment and types of investments, type of areas that you're focused on?
Focus on the middle market. And I like the middle market. I've had the opportunity to work with larger private equity firms and smaller. And I think we found that the middle market is still a less efficient marketplace. The bigger you get, especially with information and markets the way they work now, you believe more and more in efficient market theory, which is all of the information that can possibly be perceived is baked in. And when you're looking at the major Fortune 500 companies and whatnot, it's hard not to argue. They're widely covered by a number of analysts around the world, and they have that distinct privilege of being criticized by just about every level of academia, market participant, and transaction broker. In the middle market, there is a little bit of lack of information. Those companies need people to work a little harder, dig a little deeper to find out information, even in this age of readily available information. So the ability to transact in that space that's less efficient, where it's not as hard to have a contrary view. You know, a lot of people say investing, if the market already has all the information priced in, the only way you can make money is to have a contradictory view of the market. You have to kind of have a different view and then be right, whether you're going long or short with the situation. In the middle market, it's not so much. You can really get in, and because you took the time to understand it, you can be of great assistance, especially if you're bringing that same resources and talent to a middle market company that may not have that available. So really, the size of the business is kind of a critical first juncture. To answer your question further, we like companies that we can understand. You know, it's been said before, you should always invest in a company that a fool could run because eventually one may. And so we try to look at businesses that we can get our head around that aren't completely dependent on intellectual property and asset-light type structures that really have a business model that we can understand that's large enough that technological obsolescence and other things, you're not going to be readily displaced in the market. And so we love industrial businesses, automotive businesses, retail businesses, communications, transportation, a lot of that. We probably, the only thing we dissuade is we stay away from venture capital and some of the, and I have great regard for people to do that. I think it's a little harder to sleep when you're going in untested and uncharted waters.
One of the other areas you didn't mention was golf. So talk about Blue Jack and partnering with Beacon Land and Tiger Woods.
Sure. So golf, hospitality, resorts is one area that I've enjoyed investing and been being a part of over time. I think private equity likes it because management still matters, and it's more about the creative process than standard real estate. So we have not done standard real estate in the traditional sense of let's put an office building in a place convenient to people, or let's put a hotel next to the convention center. We've really sought out resort destinations that people go to by choice. It's a discretionary decision, and they're willing to invest their time and energy as a customer in a product that they believe in. So we look for products that are able to differentiate. Blue Jack is at the leader of that. You know, I think it's a culmination of we've got a talented management team and people that really looked at what differentiates it from the traditional golf community. You know, it used to be that you built a master plan community, you put a golf course, and everybody was happy. Really, only dad was happy, or the golfer in the family. Now they look at it as we look at it as a private resort destination. This is a place you're choosing to live that's multi-generational. And so even though proud to have an award-winning, hopefully, golf course open up, the fact that we have this fort focused on kids with bowling alleys, fishing experiences, hiking, all of these other things really make it a place that people want to come and spend their time and money.
And you obviously enjoy that, but that leads me to the next question, was how'd you get into this?
So we had, coming out of the crisis, we had a number of investments in hospitality, both resorts, master plan communities, and so we were, I'd say, somewhat forced in the industry by the timing of it. A lot of these projects are very long dated. They're not what we refer to in finance as the J curve. You're gonna go cash flow negative before you come back positive. It's not like buying a hotel. You open up, you start cash flowing day one. So it lent itself to private equity and longer term investors in hospitality. So we got into the space and continued to see what we liked the most. Opportunities to acquire resorts at attractive valuations that needed management on a, in a turnaround, most likely have been stalled, and that we could control or influence the outcome. And so those were the three criteria that we set out as we looked in the space. Blue Jack happened to have all of them. It was a very storied deal, and I was proud it was in Texas. If you look at our investments, we're all over the map. But Texas, bless the state, has been healthy enough from an economic standpoint. There hasn't been a lot of opportunity for a deep value investor in the state of Texas. Prices have been pretty resilient. However, this development was created by a guy named Thomas Blake back in 1986. There's a rumor that he couldn't get into Augusta, so he decided to build his own. Hired Ben Crenshaw to go out and build this private course. And then sometime around early 2001, passed away from cancer, and his family didn't want to take it over and continue the business. So a group of investors stepped in, acquired it in late 2007, early 2008, which was not good timing to acquire anything, unfortunately, and really struggled with the investment over a number of years in terms of trying to run it as a public course and getting all the entitlements and whatnot necessary. So again, for us, it really presented a distressed opportunity in the sense that it had been stalled for a number of years. It needed capital. It needed a fresh idea. And that's when we came in.
Real quick, in the last minute or so, your company is going to celebrate its sixth anniversary next month. Yet you purchased the company 2 years ago. Why did you buy the company?
So we founded the firm in 2010 with a larger private equity firm, investment partner of mine, around a large billion-dollar acquisition. So we were created to effectively manage that first investment together. And no different than a lot of six-year-olds or four-year-olds at the time, we started to grow away and figure out where we wanted to be in the market and a desire to really address the middle market as a specialty. We had taken on a number of other investors, so we were no longer captive to the one private equity firm we were working with. So really having great partners that said, look, if this is what you want to do with the business, we support it. However, it's different than what we would do with the business. And so I had the opportunity and the means to acquire it from them so I'd have absolute control and then could take on new investment partners, which we started doing last year, and go after our specific niche.
Well, tell everybody where they can find out more about Lantern Asset Management.
We've got a website. It's always the easiest way these days, which is www.lanternam.com. Lantern is in the light. AM is in assetmanagement.com.
Well, Andy, thank you very much for being a part of Playmakers Talk Show. Great information. Andy Mitchell is founder, CEO, and managing partner of Lantern Capital Partners and Lantern Asset Management. This has been a terrific show. Thank you for being Playmakers. Our first Playmaker was Ashley Wilkes, Executive Director of A World for Children. And we just spoke with Andy Mitchell. Andy is CEO of Lantern Asset Management. It's been great having our guests on the show. And thank you very much for joining us. Join us at PlaymakersTalkShow.com where you can get all of our replays and past episodes. That's PlaymakersTalkShow.com. And we're going to be back next week with more Playmakers. See you then.
You've been listening to Playmakers Talk Show with Steve Klein. Join him again next Friday at 3 p.m. for another sit-down with DFW's most interesting Playmakers.